The following is a breakout session from the 2014 Acts 29 conference in Dallas. Given the interactive nature of breakouts and Q&A, there may be extended periods of silence.
All right, guys. Hey, we're going to get started with the next session here on financial responsibility. Our next speaker and last one for the day is going to be Pastor Paul Whaley from Summit Crossing Community Church in Huntsville, Alabama. So let's welcome him as he comes up and talks to us.
Man, oh, it's good to be with you. I don't know anything about finances, so I don't know why they asked me to do this. So what I've done, let me give you a quick context snapshot of who I am, where I am church-wise, and probably why they asked me to teach on this, and then also introduce you to our executive pastor, who I grabbed to come along with me, because he's really the guy that does all this. So, but God has blessed us as a church tremendously. We launched 11 years ago, four families in a den with a big dream, but really no clue what we were doing. I was a youth guy for 15 years, thought I was going to be in youth ministry my whole life, thought I'd be that 80-year-old still playing with teenagers. That's just kind of my heart. And so now I'm a church planter doing the same thing, but just with adults. So as I'm serving in a church as a youth pastor, really out of the blue, honestly, kind of a curveball, if it led to step out and plant a church with two other key guys, three key families. And as we began this process 11 years ago or so, there were no real church planting models to go after. I'm sure there was. You know, there were some church planting books out there, Stetzer and some of those guys, and we did the best we could, you know, reading some of those guys, but we just didn't know who to follow. And one of the things, we were in the South, and so for us, in our four-hour radius, the church that we had heard about that's doing new, creative, innovative things, because we're like, hey, that's going to be us. We're going to be the next creative, innovative church plant, all three of us. And so we went to North Point Community Church in Atlanta. Learned a ton from Andy Stanley, went to a couple of drive conferences, came back, said, let's do that. That looks great. So we painted our church hallways the same color as North Point. We adopted their vision statement, and we went after it. We were like, we're calling ourselves Summit Crossing, but really, if you press, you know, below the surface, we're really North Point in disguise. And I was a really poor imitation of Andy Stanley, but I did the best I could. And it was so, just to give you a quick insight to this, I just want to kind of snapshot where we are today and let you hear our story. Because finances, developing financial responsibility has been something we knew day one we want to be responsible. But what we've learned is when we have discovered who we are, it's been much easier to cast a compelling vision, to steward our finances well, and to be responsible. But those first few years, we're scrambling for who we are, and we're thinking, Jesus, yes, Bible, yes, but creativity is how we're going to get them in. And we're going to be creative, we're going to suck them in, and then we're going to give them Jesus. And so I had a personal gospel awakening 5 years ago, therefore our church we're a radically different church now. But in some ways, we're still creative, but we flipped it to where we want our creativity to undergird and articulate the gospel rather than just be creative for the sake of being creative. So our first couple of years, we would spend money on creative things because we thought that's what we're supposed to do. So we would potentially go, you know, get a car, not buy it, but lease it, park it out front, and talk about a series about drive and how are you driven. I mean, we did crazy stuff. We probably the lowest point of my ministry was I think we're a year or two years old. We're doing a parenting series, and we decided we're going to do a four-week series on rules of parenting. We created this whole football theme, whole look of posters, you know, football games coming up, and whole lingo. We had a couple of MCs on Sunday mornings and referee outfits kind of start the Sunday off. And the lowest point was when we had our elder wives talk them into getting their cheerleading outfits out from high school and don those bad boys back on and run into the worship center with plastic footballs with my message points on them and chunking them into the crowd in the first 5 minutes of our service, probably 150, 200 people in the room, with our, yeah, you've never done that, I know. because you guys are planting in a much better generation. And so I thought to myself, we've hit a low point, but man, this is fun. This is awesome. People are diving for those balls. So we went from that, 1-2 years old. We would do, you know, a whole series around the show Lost, 24. We create stage themes. We built half a wrecked plane and put it in our worship center. Now, it was a sad display of a wrecked plane, but it was a wrecked plane. It was terrible. So anyway, long enough on that. So we went from thinking we got to be creative, and we're going to teach through topical, and that's how we're going to invest money. So we did all these things, and then 6 years ago now, in 08, I went to an Acts 29 boot camp in Seattle. A friend of mine talked me into going, so thankful he did. I heard, and it was kind of a perfect storm, if you will. I was already turned on, starting to read guys like Keller and Martin Lloyd-Jones and some of these guys, and my world is already being rocked. And so I go and I hear these pastors talk about the gospel is not just for salvation, but for sanctification in Romans 1, 16, 17. I'm like, boom. I mean, how did I miss this? I grew up in the church. I feel like I've preached the gospel really since I was a teenager, but I wasn't preaching the gospel. And so I came back, just so happened to have pretty much a very timely retreat planned with our elders. It was already on the calendar. We got away. I kind of downloaded, here's what's going on in my heart. Very similar to what God was already doing in some of our other elders' hearts. God synced us up. And for the first time, really, when we were 5-6 years old at the time, we really started figuring out this is who we are. This is what God's doing in us. This is what God's leading us to. And so we no longer are just going to try to react of what we don't want to be as a church and try to figure out, okay, that sounds good. Let's be that too. Let's figure out who we are. And we're still growing that, quite honestly, but we feel like we're finally figuring out our own DNA, which again, if you're going to have financial responsibility, you've got to know who you are. So we transitioned in 08, just to give you a quick example, from topical to expositional. We'll still do some topical here and there if it ties in and there's a purpose for it. So we haven't just totally chunked everything, but pretty much expositional at this point, made that transition. We went from 1 year later, we transitioned in 09. Also got sucked into Vanderstelt, GCM, Soma, some of these guys, went to Verge, cornered those guys, got lunch, dinner with them, bought them some drinks, talked them into letting us, you know, pick their brain. They know who we were. We ended up, actually, our church staff, I had a couple of guys with me, we talked them into coming to Huntsville and doing like a conference for the South. You maybe came to one of those conferences, GCM conferences in Huntsville. That kind of started a process for us of rethinking how we do community life. Community life for us, day one was an essential. Acts 2, 42, 47 was huge for us. It's kind of the picture, what we wanted to go after. And so we shifted in 09 to closed small groups like North Point would do, if you're familiar with that at all, or just closed small groups too. And we were around 35 groups at the time. To 5 years later, 4 years later, in that transition to missional communities, which are more open, making disciples to make disciples, built around gospel identity, rhythms, all the things that we've learned from our Soma friends and what we've learned more importantly through Scripture and what we feel like Acts 2 really looks like and how we're to live that out, making disciples and make disciples, life on life. And we've gone from 35 groups to about 90 groups that meet throughout our city. So the question for us that we're always asking ourselves, we're a church that wants to plant churches, healthy churches. We want to continue to do that. We want to continue to plant groups healthily. How do we do that in a financial responsible way? Without, you know, we started year one, I think, and Greg, my ex-piece here, I may throw him under the bus several times today, ask him to come with me. But I think our original budget year one was around $80,000. So you have to really think how you're going to spend your money. I mean, for, you know, barely can pay the lead pastor, much less anything else. Till today, our budget's about $1.8 million across 3 campuses. So how do we steward that with the same vision of mine of planting missional communities, gospel centrality? So I want to just jump into, as quick as I can, I want to get as much nuts and bolts as I can with you. I know Bruce Wesley was in here. That guy's a guru. So, I mean, chances are everything I'm about to say is going to sound completely stupid. So I just want to give you what we're doing. Here's what we're doing. Take it or leave it, and then give you a chance to to ask questions practically, and that's where I may get Greg to help me answer questions if I can't field it for you. So here's what I want to just touch on practically. How have we grown in financial responsibility? Again, I think this is bragging on Jesus, not bragging on us, because again, we've really scrambled the whole way through kind of figuring this out as we've gone. But by God's grace, we've always met budget. In fact, I think all but one year we went way over budget. And that one year was a unique year, and we even covered it pretty quick. But we've always met budget. We typically, not only will we meet budget, we do, and I don't want to get too far along because these are some of the nuts and bolts, we'll actually do quarterly reviews. And our quarterly reviews, we'll look at, okay, where are we? And when we are, typically the trend is we'll usually be above budget already each quarter. And so we reallocate, okay, where are we going to put this money, rather than just being spontaneous, well, we got all this extra money, now what we do with it? We actually review it quarterly. So we're over, so what are the needs and the priorities? Do we have church plants we need to focus in on? Do we have a new church plant? How are our missional communities doing? Do we need to bring in coaching and shepherding? What do we need to do? Do we need to add staffing? This is a good time for us to consider. Okay, we've got $40,000 above budget. This is a good time for us to look at this staff member that's on our radar. This is the time. So we've tried to learn to do that. So here's, again, let me just get back, nuts and bolts. So we're going to look at three categories: healthy budgets, a healthy leader, and then a healthy culture. So let me start with a budget, because I feel like budgeting, and I'm, again, I don't want to assume anything, but I'm assuming you guys have a theological framework for healthy finances. I mean, we talk about budgets, we talk about these things, but it has to be in the framework of making disciples. And I'm just going to assume that our boy Bruce did it right, and I'm going to just jump in, all right, to more practical, all right? So budgeting, for us, let me just give you some handles. What we look for in forming a healthy budget. So when you think healthy budget, think through these two lenses. This is what we think through. Forming a healthy budget and actually implementing that healthy budget. So first, how do you form a budget? We begin with a balanced personnel percentage. And you can do, there's all types of research out there that will kind of speak into what's a healthy percentage. What we've learned over the years, and this is going to shift, obviously, in the life stage of your church. When you're 1 to 2 years old, your percentage probably is going to be a little higher than when you'd like it to be as far as part of your budget. But have in mind, as you grow your budget, what's your goal and how are you going to get there? So for us, we've just from day one, and I've had some guys that I quite honestly, I've kind of gone in kicking and screaming a little bit, like, nah, you guys are so conservative, so over the top, but they've been right all along. The number we've landed on is 45 to 50% of our budget we try to push that towards personnel. That may seem heavy to you, that may seem light, but for us, that's a good balance. We want to invest in people. We do want to invest in personnel, really more than programming. So that's what we look towards. So we look at our overall budget. We think, okay, we're in the 45 to 50% range. And for us right now, because we are a multi-site church, that includes all our staff across campuses. We try to come in that 40 to 50. Last year, I think as we were running the numbers, we actually hit about 54. So for us, we were actually a little higher than we wanted to be. So what that caused us to do is kind of, okay, review this year. We really don't want to add staff this year. So what does it look like for us to equip the staff we have to do the job instead of just hiring someone else? Balanced personnel percentage, we take that into account. Number two, we actually have thought through what is a balanced approach to savings. I was asking Greg, what is our approach to that? And basically what we've done from day one, and I didn't even know this until recently, we don't tell anybody we do this. Our finance team, along with our executive pastor, they've determined they take in over budget and set aside into savings the amount it would take to pay our entire staff for a month. And they push that aside. So whatever your personnel budget is, they've looked at that, added it up. So, okay, we're going to, before really we do anything else, we're going to kind of get that saved up, push that aside, and that's going to be kind of our nobody talks about savings account. And we're going to try not to touch it. You know, we have a very specific budget for church planting and ministry and administration and obviously personnel. But that budget is kind of like, for us, is a good number to think savings. Because, again, you're going to have to process and pray through what's healthy. You don't want to be a hoarder, but you don't want to be just so carefree that you're not smart either. So for us, that's been kind of a good balance. Take that for what it's worth. Balanced approach to savings. Whatever it is, you better think through that and get a team to help you process that. Budget must match the vision. This goes back to my original, you know, shenanigans stories when we were doing crazy, silly vision stuff. We were spending money on this kind of thing. So we had to consider, okay, what do we really want to spend our money on? What's most important? So as you think through your vision, you better have it nailed down. Here's the priorities: planting, MCs, gatherings, whatever it is. And when you look at your budget, does it match that? So for us, we use terms attractional and missional. And we, in a church in the South, I'm just, again, speaking from my context, we still want to be both of those, not just one or the other. We don't want to do one really well and one really sucky. We would really want to do both well. We want two really good open doors that are leading to making disciples to make disciples. But for us, we have to constantly watch, because all of our backgrounds, when I say most or all, our staff come from attractional backgrounds. And it's what we know, it's what we lean towards, it's our bent. So we have to constantly ask ourselves, just because we like the attractional side and we love the Sunday gathering, God's blessing the Sunday gathering, we look at our budget, does our budget match what we're actually telling our people, that we're really about missional communities, that we're about making disciples and make disciples on mission throughout the week, Monday through Saturday. We gather on Sundays to celebrate and grow in the gospel. Absolutely, that's part of it. Do not undervalue that. But as you think about what we're going after, we want to live missionally. So we have to look at our budgets. Okay, our personnel, 75% of our personnel is going towards the attractional side of things. Is this healthy? We evaluate that. And if it's not where we want it, we start rethinking, okay, do we need to take some of what our staff are doing towards the attractional side? Okay, how could we make their job description more missional? So think less Sunday and more Monday through Saturday with your staff position. So it may just be reallocating job description, job responsibilities, and it may be actually changing staff altogether, that you've got a guy that all he knows is a Sunday gathering. He's got no ability to help you make disciples during the week, and you might have to strongly consider having some conversations at that point. But that's just an example. Personnel, does it match your budget? Your ministry, what are you giving your money towards? Again, for us, our ministry line item is pretty thin. We ask our people, you do it. You do it within your rhythms, make disciples. We'll give you some resources here and there. We do workshops. We hand out free books. But even our curriculum, it's sermon-based. It doesn't cost us any money. We just put questions up, and they use that. We don't spend a ton of money on curriculum, but we do spend a ton of money on childcare. So for us, this has been a core value of ours. We want our adults to actually have real community where their kids aren't hanging on them at least for 1 hour to 2 hours. So we say, okay, you get a babysitter, we'll pay for that. We've done that from year one, and because we put that in our budget year one, we've been able to grow into it. So if you are considering that, I would say start early and get on it, because it can eat you up. So we've got 90 groups, and every one of our groups has 18 to 20 people in that group. All 18 to 20 can fill out a child reimbursement request and get reimbursed. Now, I will say this, we don't make it real easy. You got to fill out the paperwork. You got to go through the hoops a little bit, but if you need it, it's there. So, but that's a large budget expense for us. Our children's ministry, we do the gospel project. It's not a huge expense for us to do that. So our ministry line item, we've been able to be pretty smart with it and then put our money where church planting and growing leaders and that kind of thing. Implement a healthy budget, all right? So that's forming, just some thoughts there. Now here's implementing a healthy budget. For us, we've had to learn how to track healthy numbers. So we've, over the years, from year one to year 11 now, we've determined, okay, here's the trend for us. We look at the amount of adults. We count adults and children, because children count in our numbers. But for budgeting's sake, we have a second line item where we have someone that counts every week our adults in the worship center, and then we average out our average giving per adult, and that gives us a guide for next year's budget. So that's one. I'll kind of come back to a minute and then speak more how that works out. So we have a good tracking system. How are you gonna implement your budget? I mean, you just kind of shooting in the dark. Are you just a complete dreamer and say, well, God's gonna do it? Or are you gonna really be smart about it? How to project yearly, that goes into that as well. So again, for us, we do yearly reviews and then quarterly reviews. How to pick the right team, I think, is important. That's something you need to be thinking right now. Church size 4 to 800. You should have a pretty good team in place helping you do this, pastors. For us, we look for, we call them a finance team, and they work with Greg, our executive pastor, one of our elders. We've got another elder on that team. The others we would consider deacons, so it's kind of a combination of elders and deacons on that team. And these are guys, we look for a good mix on this team that can work alongside our elders that get the vision. They've tasted it, they've digested it, and they've lived it. So these guys understand what we're doing. These aren't just numbers guys that are great accountants. They get the vision of Summit Crossing. So we look for guys that get the vision and that understand we're going to be casting a big vision, and their role is to take this big vision and make it work. And they may ask hard questions. They may even push back at times. But for the most part, we're looking for guys that are balanced and they're practical, they're conservative, but they don't mind dreaming with you either. And that, I know that's maybe, you may think, well, that, does that guy really exist? I mean, I would challenge you, look for those individuals. Be careful not to get where you let the pendulum swing so far in one of the directions. In other words, you don't want just dreamers on that team. If there was a team filled with guys like me, we would be in 6 buildings right now in 30,000 different cities. So it requires having guys that, okay, they can listen to big visions. Okay, now let's get this on the ground. Let's make this work. And by God's grace, again, that's the type of team we've seen built, and it's beautiful every year. It's rare, and again, Greg could back me up on this, rare that we throw something out at them, and they're like, guys, we just can't do this. Most of the time, like, oh, this is big, but if you think this is where we got to go, we'll try to make it happen. And so have a right team trying to implement this right budget every year. It's going to be critical for you. And then I would challenge you, how are you evaluating on a yearly basis? Did you really steward the budget that God called you to put before the people? How did you steward the finances? Were you frivolous with it? Again, the larger you get, the more money it comes in, the easier it is just to say yes to a lot of things. And I would encourage you to think through, okay, how can we keep that funnel really pointed in the right direction towards our vision and make sure we are stewarding the money God has given us? And there's been, just in the last year at our Acts 29 events, from the lead pastor retreat to this, I've heard some great ideas, and we've started processing our own team how we're going to do that, from communicating vision and documents to letters to, you know, town hall meetings where you're casting vision, how you're spending the money. So evaluate how you're doing that. All right, so that's implementing healthy budget. Second, healthy leader, real quick. So when I say healthy leader, I'm primarily focusing on lead pastor, executive pastor here, better be healthy. And even I would say, I would push that even to the elder team. And again, I'd probably be redundant to go here because I know maybe Bruce talked about this some, but if your elders aren't healthy in their personal finances, healthy in giving to the church, it's not going to trickle down. So first of all, I would say, lead by example. So make sure your leader's healthy, your leaders are healthy. And then I would make sure they have the right involvement. So for us, I've had to learn, what is the right involvement for me as the lead pastor? How much do I need to know when it comes to finances? How much do I need to stay out of? And so in my mind, this is just kind of how I operate. I'm not a numbers guy anyway. I'm dangerous, and they know that, so they keep me far away. It's always jokes going on, keep Paul away from the money. I mean, he'll love to spend it. So I'm okay with that. I don't really want to know a whole lot. But in my mind as a leader, I feel like it is a responsibility of mine to know where we are in general as a church. Is our vision matching up with the budget? So I need to know big numbers. How did we spend our budget last year? How are we paying our staff? There was a season where I sat down with Grace and said, listen, we've got to evaluate where we're paying our executive staff. I don't think we're being fair. And I know it's awkward coming from me because one of the executive staff members, I'm not saying I want a pay raise, although I do, but all of us, we've been doing this for a while, and if we were to evaluate the average, I think we're all underpaid. What do you think? He's like, I think you're right. We need to talk to the guy. So I stepped out at that point, had nothing to do with it, but the team came in, and we tasked them with evaluating what is a moderate pay, not extravagant, but not underpaid, for the level of staff where we were as an executive team. So we challenged them, research the church circles. Yes, church staff, get, you know, leadership network, go explore all the websites and documents you can. But at the same time, let's think practically. We're asking our pastors to live in a city. What's the median income? What does it take to live in this city? So look at your city context. Who's making the median age? Measure with that. So for us, we started thinking, okay, let's look at the principals, the vice principals' salaries. This is kind of the same level of leadership we are. Let's take that into. So we kind of gave them some direction. I worked alongside Greg, and then general conversations from that point, I stepped out. So again, I would just challenge you, know enough to know what's going on, but I wouldn't get so much in the weeds that you could trip your own heart up and trip your team up, especially if that's not your gifting. So learn your right involvement, learn to set good vision as the leader. So know what the vision is, know how to compel your team. Chandler talked about this in one of our breakouts earlier. I thought it was so helpful. As you cast vision, and I know, again, you've been doing this for a while now, if you're 400 to 800, but we have to get into such a habit of casting a vision that is trustworthy. In other words, not just throwing out empty promises and initiatives that you never can follow up with, but cast vision that you believe, first of all, is God-breathed, God's leading you, and that actually you have execution and follow-up plans in place to make happen. Because when you begin to cast vision that you've actually followed through with and people can measure, okay, they said they were going to plant a second campus, and they actually did. So now when they start about talking about planting a fourth campus, I actually believe in it. I'm going to get behind that. But if you've been casting a vision for 10 years, we're going to plant 10 churches and you yet to really plant 10 missional community groups, they're probably not going to get behind it. So learn to cast big vision, but do it in a trustworthy way. And I would encourage you, be in the Spirit at all times. Quick note here, I typed out in my notes something I believe God's taught me in this way. I'm speaking as a confessional here because this is my leaning, especially day one. I got so early on because I'm just an entrepreneurial at heart. I love big vision. I love dreaming big. I would get in the habit of dreaming about what could I do? What could we do if we had X amount of money? So if we had $1 million, what would we do? We would buy a new building. We would plant 2 more churches. And I mean, I would stay up at night thinking, how can we get $1 million? Is there any way we can talk Tiger Woods into coming to our church? I mean, there's just, I was always thinking, okay, if I had this amount of means, this is what we would do. And here's what God's taught me over the years, that we need to learn to maximize your current means before you focus so much on getting more means. In other words, instead of drawing up what you would do if you had $2 million budget, think about what you can do now with a $200,000 budget. Dream big, but be creative and smart and be smart along the way. So I would challenge you, leader, think now, wherever God has you, whatever means he's given you, it's God's grace, God's gift to you. If you are still here, you have any means at all, it's from him and for him. Consider as a leader, how can I maximize the crap out of this means first? How can I steward it? What can we do with 200 grand? Can we grow our staff? Can we make things healthier? Can we train one more person? What could we do with this money? And think, and most of the terms, use your entrepreneurial spirit to maximize where you are and then trust God with the future growth. And what's going to happen is you learn to maximize those levels. The larger you get, the easier it's going to come for you to actually execute those dreams. So I don't want to say don't stop being out 1 to 2 years, 3 years ahead of everybody else. That's good to always kind of be a little further out as a leader. But don't get so caught up in being so far ahead you're not stewarding what God's given you currently. Does that make sense? Learn to balance that. Understand your gifting, guys. I mean, I know some of you in this room, and you make me mad how you're gifted in both kingly and prophet and priest. I mean, you're a preacher, and then you can do systems. And I want to punch you in the face. I can't even hardly preach. I can't really do hardly anything but play cornhole and dominate you. But other than that, I have no system structure. So I've just had to understand my weaknesses and get gurus around me. And so if that's you, own your gifting, grow in your strengths, and then get guys around you that are strong. And And I pray that you'll be humble and understand that when you start getting the right leaders around you that really can do the job and they can execute it, they are going to be a lot better than you. And people may even start going towards them, and they have opportunities to lead, even opportunities to speak, do things. And are you prepared as the leader to say, you know what? Go, boy. You do this. We need you doing this. And let me continue to do what I do best, even if I don't get credit for it. Are you prepared for that? A question we constantly wrestle with, and we truly wrestle with this from myself to every staff person. We constantly push them to ask the question, am I the right person for this job? From lead pastor to executive pastor to missional community pastor to worship pastor, all the way across, am I the right person? And if I am, what are my weaknesses? What do I need to get around me to shore that up? And if I'm not, am I willing to step aside, do lattice work, and let somebody else thrive for the glory of God? It's going to be difficult, but I'm telling you, you are at that range right now, 4,800. My guess is many of you sitting in the room right now need to be asking yourself that question. Because you're going to, this is real quick note. It's terrible drawing. I learned this from my good friend Elliot Grudem. I'm still processing this. Elliot, I've spent a last year and a half in a cohort with him and have learned so much. And one thing that he's pressed us on through some people he's learned this to is in leadership. And at the 4,800 range, this is going to be where you have to evaluate. To be healthy as a leader, this is what he would call this polarity of leadership. And typically what happens is you want an organization and a leader to be at the same level. But typically what happens is the organization outgrows the leader and the leader doesn't know how to respond. So either the leader just goes inward and in denial and keeps doing the same thing over and over, thinking it's going to get better, and it doesn't, and he ends up getting crushed. Or the leader realizes, I've got to grow at the same level of the organization, so help. What can I do? Who can I get around? And I would encourage you, if you are not the lead pastor here, but you're a staff member, I want you to be thinking, okay, how can I help my lead pastor process? Is he at the same level as our organization? Is he growing at the same level? And even press that down into all your ministries, not just your lead pastor, but is your executive pastor growing at the same level as that part of the ministry? Is your missional community pastor growing at the same level as your missional communities are growing in that organization? So think in terms of those categories. And if this is out of place, you better know how to evaluate it and then have a plan in place to help equip. And so for us, our first line of defense, like, let's get them help. Let's train them. Let's give them a chance. And let's discover their weaknesses, doing maybe a 360 profile on them, doing a strength finders test on them, figure out helpful tools to help them understand where they are as a leader, and then figure out ways to build a team around that leader. So for me, I kind of did it out of desperation from day one, just kind of out of have to, and now it's kind of become part of our DNA. It's what I've done from day one. I knew my limitations. And so from day one, and this is God's grace, the two people that came with me were strongest in the areas I was weakest. And so we've looked at this, okay, wow, God did that. Now that's kind of how we want to continue to operate every aspect of our ministries. So healthy leader, understand how to evaluate that. Role within the church, got to blow through this. Role within the church, cast compelling, consistent vision. I've talked about that already. Create right balance for generosity, sermons yearly. What is that good balance? Again, we cannot reiterate enough. You must talk about giving. Jesus talked about it. We've got to talk about it. Don't be afraid to do so. And if you really believe you're in kingdom work, then what better thing to talk about? What better investment could we make than in the kingdom of God? So why are we going to apologize? If we truly, in our heart and with pure motive, are going after building the kingdom of God, not building a personal kingdom, that we're just trying to build a name for ourselves, you're not just trying to build a church name, you're not just trying to build a personal name, but you actually, in your gut of guts and heart of hearts, your motive is to build the kingdom of God, to be a part of gospel advancement, then why in the world would we ever, ever be afraid of standing up before our people and say, hey, I dare you to give. I challenge you to give. It's actually an implication of the gospel for us to be generous. And so in teaching, I would also strongly encourage you to figure out ways to create a culture of generosity and sacrifice in your church. And again, something we did early on is when we would process big vision, we would think, okay, let's how can we challenge our people to sacrifice? And just to give you an example, how this worked for us, I think we were 2.5 years old, and maybe 3 years old, and we had been renting a building, and we were like, hey, we're outgrowing this, we got to think big, we need to buy some land and build. And so we went before our body, and we cast this vision, our elders, and we asked our people to give sacrificially, and all we said is, okay, here's the date, circle on the calendar, I don't remember how long it was, 3 or 4 months, we're going to communicate it's coming up around Thanksgiving. Give sacrificially. But here's what we're going to do. We're not going to ask you to do something that as elders and leaders we're not doing ourselves. So again, a church of 200, we went to our elders and our small group leaders and said, okay, we want you to give, pledge, give. We want to come up with a number. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to go before our people and say, okay, this is the number your leaders are giving. And we set a number of $300,000 was our target to raise in one Sunday in cash. And so our elders and our small group leaders in a meeting and all going back and praying and processing what they're going to give sacrificially all came back into a meeting and said, okay, here's what I'm giving. I'd sold a house recently. I'm giving this the profit. I actually can sell a car. I'm going to give that, blah, blah, blah. We added up. We had $75,000 given from just our leadership team. We went to our church and said, hey, here's what we're doing. We believe in sacrifice. We want to model that. Our leaders, and we didn't specify who gave what, but we said, as a group, we are giving $75,000 to this one-time giving. When the giving day came around, we actually hit our goal. The crazy thing was, after we took the money in, this is another thing we've learned in financial responsibilities, being completely transparent and honest. About a year or two after taking this money in, we realized buying land was not the right way to go. We had plans built up. It was going to cost way too much money, and we were not going to go in that long-term debt. So we pulled back, said, you know what, thanks for giving your money. We're keeping it till we figure out what God's going to do. A couple of years later, I don't remember the timeline, we moved into our current facility. We took the cash that was there. In the meantime, we used some of that cash. Here's the irony of it all. We actually used some of that to actually pay for a parking lot for our people to park on Sunday mornings. We ran our parking. So it gave us kind of a fund to draw from that. It was the land we bought was across the street from our building. Anyway, we used it for parking. So we said, hey, basically what you've done, you've rented parking for us for 3 years, plus now you've given us a down payment on the new building. We're actually moving in 2 or 3 years later. But we were, as elders, we just got to say, hey, we missed this. Not completely, but we've missed it a little bit. So hang with us. We're continuing to process and pray through this. So we just try to be honest, transparent all the way through. Communicate, gospel wins. You've got to figure out a way to do that. If you want your people to keep giving, you've got to share how you're winning, how the gospel is advancing. Think practically. Healthy culture, create the right culture. Create a culture of gratitude, expectation, sacrifice. I talked about that. Have a trusted team. And then finally, and let me just rush through this, and then I want to give you Q&A time. I would say, you know, you also need to not only learn to implement these budgets, create this culture, but you need to learn to protect this culture of healthy finances. And, you know, just like in marriages, you maybe have even experienced this, finances, and I don't know about you, and my premarital counseling and then marital counseling through the years, one of the biggest things that always comes up in marital strife is finances. It can cripple a couple. If you don't have it together, if it just unravels, everything else unravels. Same thing applies to our churches. I mean, if you don't have your finances in order, what's happening right now, the winds and the excitement, it could be like a house of cards. If you don't think through responsibility, if you don't have the right teams in place helping you, if your elders don't have the right vision, if the budget process is just haphazard, I plead with you, think through how are your systems in place of protecting your financial health as a church. And so I would, in doing that, think through, okay, how can you ongoing learn to celebrate what God's done, keep your people informed, posted, and excited, learn to communicate regularly through new member classes, membership meetings, et cetera, membership. We do in our missional community workshops, we do a quarterly workshop. And we let Greg come up, our executive pastor, we give him a spot just about every workshop. Say, okay, Greg, come talk to us about where we are financially. How are we doing as a church? He'll throw up the numbers. Hey, here's what God's done. Here's where we are. here's where we're kind of hurting if that's the case. And we just put it out there. Communicate. Learn to communicate. And then finally, learn to eliminate. The longer you exist, the less intentional you possibly could become. So be relentless, going back to vision, matching, budget, and think through a yearly, okay, here's our budget. What do we need to cut back on? Just because we're bringing this in doesn't mean we need to spend it on that. So who's going to help you do that process of elimination? Do you need to still partner with this church plant that's 10 years old and has 10 people coming to it and you're giving $2,000 to that church planter? Is that something that's a good steward? I don't know, maybe. But you need to strongly consider, is that where you are? Is this ministry, I didn't know our ladies are still going to Six Flags every year for $6,000. How did that happen? Well, we better get rid of that. I mean, I don't know. You know, if your elder wives are like ours, they're tricksy, so be careful. I don't know. So just process of elimination. All right. So those are my three handles I would encourage you with. Healthy budget, learn to form it, learn to implement it. Your leader and leaders better be healthy. And then I would finally say have a right culture. How to create that culture and how to protect that culture of healthy finances. All right. So let me pause there. Let me give my man Greg an opportunity to answer some questions too. So just all those nuts and bolts, anything else? What concerns you in the area of finances? What questions and answers do you have? Jerry, I don't know if you have any specific questions you want to launch me into, but
would you talk a little bit more? I was asking him, what are those kind of town hall financial update meetings look like when you guys are tired or things aren't going well? How do you do that? What does that look like?
I'll let you speak to that because honestly, I hate to say it, it's been so seldom that we've actually been in a pinch.
Well, maybe a bigger question, just how do you keep the congregation informed?
Yeah. Why don't you speak to that, Greg?
So we do celebrate that with our leaders and let them kind of pass that on to the missional community groups. And we try to get very specific, which I try to have fun with it so people can really laugh at kind of some of the absurd things that are in our budget. Like, for instance, one quarter I said, do you realize that our children have consumed over 300,000 goldfish in the last 3 months, you know, and that cost us X amount of dollars and da-da-da-da. But we're able to say, but they also gave $3,000 to buy a donkey for a missionary in Nepal to use to carry sick children to the doctor. And they go, that is awesome. And that equates to about the same amount of money. $3,000, we ate $3,000, but the children brought in all their change, and so we celebrated that way. And we try to do some overarching things too, and just say, look, we've got some church planter school residents that are with us. We want to be able to bless them. You know, you need to get to know them. You need to find out what they need help with, because so they're staying in some of your homes when they come in for our pastor school. We challenge them for that. We're not afraid to ask our people to give. Because we used to have, and when I first came on as executive pastor 6 years ago, I came into the church 8 years ago as the missions pastor, then moved to the executive pastor role. We used to always worry about, well, we're asking everybody to fish out of the same pond. We got, you know, this team going to Nepal raising money, and they got to raise money within the church, and we got this team going to India, and they got to raise money within the church, and then we're trying to give 15% of our budget to missions. But what we realized is that we're really not fishing the pond, that God's got a big old ocean. And he'll find a way to do it. And that's kind of what we do. We just put it out there and just say, you know, if nothing else, you're to pray about this. But we celebrate as much as we can with our people when amazing things happen. We were able to celebrate that a year before last, our budget for missions was $297,000 that we gave to missions. But the amazing thing was that our people spent over $700,000 going on mission. So that was a huge win for our people because they understood that the church was being a good steward and that they were also buying into what God was doing. And it was they were able to kind of wrap their arms around that and go, that's amazing to hear and see. Does that make sense a little bit?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll open it up. Earlier you talked about when setting the budget for the year ahead,
yep.
Sort of matching, okay, so attendance, mm-hmm. total giving, you have an idea of kind of per mm-hmm. person how much they've given. What other sort of pieces are you using to figure out what the budget is for ahead? I mean, is it these two numbers plus a percentage, plus prayer, plus goal? You know, how do you determine how much to increase the budget?
I'll let you speak to that.
So we take our, you know, at this point, we've got a lot of data behind us that we can look back at and see what the growth has been. And we can actually, you know, go back and tell you numbers 1 through 52, the last 10 years, what the giving was on all those dates and kind of follow that trend. And then we see that for some reason, God has kind of begun to bless us in the last about 9 years with about an 18 to 20% growth every year. Over the year, it just continues to grow that way, not only numerically, but also with our stewardship too. And so we take, again, a lot of statistics when you look at it, they're counting per person that they're budgeting on. We know that our children, if they're going to give, their mom and dad or granddad gave them the change they're giving, you know. So we kind of X those out, and we only count the adults in the worship center. Because we're in multiple services, we don't want to count all the adults in the building, because some of those adults are there for both services. They're just in the worship center one time. So that's what we count, is that. And then we look back and kind of see what the average was per person, per adult in the worship center for that past year, what that average was. And we look forward and we project and see if that's what we think we could do because of what we brought in. We don't necessarily budget everything that we bring in for the next year, unless we see that we've got some large things that we're about to try to do. We try to keep that pretty even so that we can always have an overage, because there's always going to be things that you want to do or that you're surprised by, but God's not surprised by, that he wants you to do. And if you had every dime allocated, then you're going to be in trouble. We also build into that we don't tell anybody about. It's not because we're trying to hide it, but we build in a reserve, 3% of our budget. We actually budget on, if our budget says 100%, we're actually only operating on 97% of it. We take 3% and just don't talk about it. And then what we do with our salaries for 1 month, or actually for all personnel, we tuck that away. And that every year we don't do anything with that. So we're not having to recreate that every year. We started doing that about 6 years ago, and now we just say what's an average month of what our personnel costs would be, and if it's gone up, you know, $15,000, and the first thing we do in the budget is take $15,000 and apply it to that. And we even keep that, we keep that in a separate bank. I mean, it's completely where we're not even, you know, tempted. So when we look at what's our liquid assets, we don't even talk about it. Does that help? Does that make any sense there? Yeah.
See, I didn't even know that, so things are going to change next. No. So to summarize, I think what Greg's saying, we look at trend, like long 10-year trend, and then we look at last year trend, kind of measure those two. We're still tracking where we've been. Is there something, is there an anomaly happening here? But if it's close to where we've always been, we'll take so we grew 18 to 20%. Let's at least start there, 18 to 20% growth numbers. Based on average, for us, it's around $47 an adult. We'll take that and say, okay, this is what we think we're going to grow into. Now, what do we want to do vision-wise, and does that fit into that window? And if it presses above it a little, there's been times like let's go. I think God's really calling us. We're still not way out of range. We're gonna have to grow a little more, we think, but this is where we're gonna start now. First quarter, we'll review and see where we gotta pull back. We're not gonna be able to do what we thought we could. So that's kind of how, if that's a summary to your question.
Okay. And let me say something too. Paul said about the our personnel percentages too. Again, our goal is to keep those things at 50% or less. Most years, we will start the year in January. We do our fiscal year is January, December. We're trying to move that. We haven't been able to do that with starting other churches that we've been able to get going. So in January, when that budget starts, this past year, it was at 61%. But that's because we knew we were not budgeting everything we brought in last year. So what that does is as your giving continues to grow, and as you're bringing in more, and you also you realize what you've budgeted, what your income is, those percentages come back down and get into place so that you've built in some savings, and you've also built in room to even add personnel or add hours to part-time people or whatever you need to do without stressing and going, we're 61%, what are we going to do? The church is going to fall down. So we literally know that we're starting here, but we front-load or we back-load that budget knowing that the back part of it's really going to catch the rest of that up and pull it back down. Does that make any sense? It's a lot easier to see on paper or on a spreadsheet, but That's basically what we do. So we were able to get it back down to there. And we started ours last year at about 61%, and we've actually got it down to about 48% at this point, just because the giving continues to go and our budget stayed right here. Does that make sense?
Greg's email is greg@summitcrossing.org. He'll answer any questions.
Anytime, yep.
Give you any documents we have. We'll give anything away we have.
1G, 1G.
What else? We're out of time, I think.
You got 5 minutes. Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Appreciate it,
yep. Let me pray for us, and these guys, can you hang around for...
Sure, yeah.
In case you have some more one-on-one questions you'd like to ask, I'll pray, and then we'll free you up to do that. Father, we love you. Thank you for the time that we've had these last couple days. Thank you for the men that were willing to travel and invest on top of everything else that they're doing, just kind of open themselves and their churches up so that we can have a look, talk about their successes, and even more so talk about their failures, and we're just grateful for that. We pray that you will help us to take what we've heard and flesh it out in our context with wisdom and clarity. We ask all this in your name. Amen. Love you guys. Enjoy the last couple of days.